Where does that come from? What pledge? The Birmingham Pledge was written in 1997 as the foundation of a grassroots effort to continue the tradition of working against racism and racial violence that is such a huge part of the history of that city. Using that pledge as an inspiration, two members of the First UU Church of Richmond, Virginia, Anita Lee and Annette Marquis, created the Richmond Pledge to End Racism. It states, "I believe that every person is entitled to dignity and respect regardless of race or color. I believe that every act and every thought of racial prejudice is harmful. If it is my thought or act, then it is harmful to me as well as to others. Therefore, from this day forward, I will strive daily to eliminate racial prejudice from my thoughts and actions. I will discourage racial prejudice by others at every opportunity. I will treat all people with dignity and respect. I will commit to working with others to transform the Greater Richmond region into a place that treats people of all races, ethnicities, and cultures with justice, equity, and compassion. And I will strive daily to honor this pledge, knowing that the world will be a better place because of my effort." So, let's take a moment and give some thought to what living into this pledge looks like and feels like. If you've taken this pledge and you overhear coworkers making racist jokes, what do you do? You've committed to discouraging racial prejudice by others at every opportunity. You're behind a woman in line at a store, and she's wearing a beautiful traditional sari. And when she's finished and walking away, the checker makes an unkind comment to you about that woman's costume. What do you do? You've taken a pledge. By the way, these are two of many instances where if I hadn't taken this pledge, I might not have felt compelled and found the courage to say something and push back. But I had, and I did. So once we've taken a pledge like this, what happens when we notice ourselves falling into patterns that uphold white supremacy? Do we sit with it and work out how to do better next time? Do we read books, listen to lectures, and start getting really comfortable being uncomfortable at our growing edges? So what if we don't disrupt these patterns of white supremacy because we don't know how? We were raised to be colorblind, and we don't have the tools to do this work. So we have Living the Pledge. It's a program of workshops held in 7 sessions that covers topics like microaggressions, what those are and how to stop doing them, and how to step in when you see them happening. Implicit biases, what ours are and how to break those patterns. The movement for Black Lives, the history of this movement, the guiding principles and common misconceptions, and a lot more. So if we had a human pledge to end racism, would you sign it? Could you live into it? Could you recognize when you fail to uphold your commitment and do the work necessary to do better next time? Could you gather with others doing the same work and learn from and alongside each other, even when it makes you really uncomfortable and you just much rather stick to coffee house gatherings instead? I believe that we can together. So I invite you to join us on October 29th after service for the first session of the Living the Pledge workshop and decide for you if you can make this deep personal commitment to end racism in yourself and in your communities.
Thank you, Ian. In the movie The Sixth Sense, a young boy is visited and terrorized by ghosts. Nobody understands him or sees his plight. And at one point, he tries to explain his terror to the child psychologist played by Bruce Willis. And he says, "You ever feel the prickly things on the back of your neck? And the tiny hairs on your arm? You know when they stand up? That's them. That's them." Now me, prior to becoming a minister, some people tease me and say I had a real job. I used to be an engineer, and I worked for about 15 years as an engineer, and then 10 in sales as an engineer. And I generally worked for a good company. They treated their employees fairly. 100% of my immediate coworkers, the sales force, 100% were straight white males. 100%. And actually, probably 95% of my customers, 95% were also straight white males. And actually, so for me, taken together, my corporate world was totally straight white males. Now, my interactions with this corporate world, I seem to get this feeling at times, this strange sense that something was amiss, or that there was a place I couldn't go, this unnamed thing. It's like the sixth sense that I had. I could feel this divider between where I was kind of allowed to go and where, well, another realm. And I'm not talking about like an ethical line. I'm not talking about an ethical barrier. It was something different. And most of my coworkers, in fact, I know my coworkers could not see this line. I was the one who had kind of a sense of it. And they couldn't see past it, obviously. They couldn't see into this other realm. Now, I believe I saw the line because I was married to an African-American woman for many years, and I have 4 children who are perceived as African-American in this culture. Because of that, that line became visible to me. It became attuned to me. Most minorities, I would imagine, most non-straight white males see this line every day. And they must be completely frustrated that most of us don't see it at all. Completely and exhausted for trying to point it out to us all the time. Exhausted and frustrated. But anyway, in the corporate world, on one side of the line was, which everyone could see, was really the realm of acceptable behavior. And included in that realm was put-downs, off-color jokes, misogyny, callousness towards the LGBT community, and even racial slurs. That's in the acceptable realm of behavior. That's my experience in the corporate world in which I lived. And on the other side of the line was a realm where diversity was truly, truly embraced. Not just talked about, but like truly embraced. Multiculturalism, truly embraced and seen as a benefit. Not just talk about, but it was truly embraced. That's where true beloved community was, on the other side of that line. Bringing that realm into the realm that everyone can see was not acceptable. It wasn't acceptable. Why? Number one, because the mission of us in the corporate world was, well, really to make money. It had no business being in the realm of what could be seen. But another reason why, bringing that true embracing of diversity, multiculturalism into our world was in a way insulting to them because they had no knowledge of it to begin with. It was kind of insulting to them. And it takes courage. It takes courage, a lot of courage, as our folks, you've heard several experiences today, to actually take something that's out of the realm of you and make that known and visible. So I applaud all those who spoke today on that. It takes a lot of courage. To say that to people, sometimes people you love and respect, takes a lot of courage. But the idea that a line like that even exists should be unacceptable to all of humanity. Unacceptable to all U.S. citizens, unacceptable to people of faith, to Unitarian Universalists, to me, and to you. A couple nights ago, we had a joint social justice meeting between the members of Human and the members of Emerson Congregation. And something that I kind of popped into my head at that meeting that I'd like to say again is that we most definitely are at a pivotal point in American history. This is the moment. I mean, you should know that, right? I don't really need to tell you. After January 20th, just the craziness that has happened is unprecedented. And what happened in Charlottesville is truly an abomination. And things have happened since then. DACA is going to be repealed. It's on the road to being repealed. So the bottom line for us is, in this moment, is that line of discrimination, intolerance, and yes, white supremacy, is that line that separates us from truly embracing multiculturalism, beloved community, is that line going to be maintained? Or is that going to be torn down? That's the bottom line. Now, you may be comfortable in your particular situation, but the future of our descendants, your children and grandchildren, my children and grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren, their future depends upon what we, you and me, begin to do right now. Regarding racism, you might say that you're all right on the subject. And maybe you are. Maybe you get it. You got it. But that, I'm sorry, that is not enough. That is not enough to dismantle that wall, that divider that we have between us. This divider, it's a scourge on America that needs to be removed. Hitler came to power in 1933. Many people, including myself, can sit on the relative comfort in our couches in our living rooms and say, "Yo, what were they thinking? What were they thinking? Why didn't they do anything? How could they let that happen?" And 80 million people were killed. 80 million people were killed. Your descendants, some of whom are in this very room right now, will ask in the future what we did. What did you do? Why didn't you do anything? How could you let that happen? And that's not a matter of if. They will ask that question. It's possibly the most important question of our time. And it is one of the guiding pillars of my ministry, and it should be one of the guiding pillars of our shared ministry together. I know for many of you, racism, talking about racism is paralyzingly fearful for many of us. But again, I'm sorry. Not being able to answer the call of our children and grandchildren, not being able to answer that call for any reason is simply, no, it's deeply troubling. It's deeply troubling. So please have the courage to answer their call. A call to at least begin to understand the issue and choose to or choose not to actually live the pledge. It's not me asking this, but our mission and our descendants calling upon us, mine and yours, to do good work for the common good. And you can start by registering for Living the Pledge workshops today. Now, I have five youth and children who I picked earlier. Could they come forward? Okay. We'll use the wireless mic. I think we're starting here with Stephen. Speak into the mic and speak loud.
Did you go to the Women's March? Did you go to Pride March? Did you go to the Black Lives Matter marches?
Why didn't you talk to me about Tamir Rice?
Why didn't you say anything when Aunt Susan made that mean joke about Jewish people at Thanksgiving dinner?
I know we can be messy, but we're young. Are you going to kick the can down the road and leave this mess for us kids to clean up?
For all of us, can you please register for Living the Pledge workshops today?
Could you go over there?